Are you not at a place where that will work?
I try, and is it the link with admin.na3acrobat something?
Oh,
you want me to be?
Yes, that.
You want? That's not working.
That one's not working. If you take the S out of the HTTPS and just go HTTP colon to that same link. I'd sent an email to the list, but I sent it about 2 minutes before this meeting started because I realized that I gave Glenn the wrong URL. So if people are trying to get into Adobe and not getting in with the URL that Glenn sent, just go in with regular HTTP instead of HTTPS.
Well, it's not working either, but maybe it will come. I don't know. It's not working for the moment.
Oh, too bad. Well, I think we may be better off just using the stuff on the wiki.
But on the wiki, it's great. It's great.
Good. Well, let's just stick with that and not try and shoehorn this into an Adobe Connect session. Sometimes new toys are a wonderful thing, but...
But what is strange is that usually I go to the Adobe Connect, but it's not the same type of link when I am on my ALAC conference call. It's another name, I guess.
Well, if you check our email list, I just sent a note to the list.
Okay.
The new URL. Okay. You might just try clicking on that and seeing how that works. My apologies. That was my mistake. Glenn foolishly took a URL from me.
I believe you, Mike. How could I not do that?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I made a mistake there. Anyway, I think we're probably going to have... This is probably the group we're going to have.
James Bladell joined.
Oh, hi, James.
Hi. Didn't think I was going to make it.
Well, it's great that you could. I'm sort of in the middle of giving up on the Adobe Connect stuff. I put a link out on the wiki in the background document section to a new page that's got all three of the diagrams that Marika sent us. And thinking that we might just use those instead and just use the wiki instead. What's interesting to me is that we have sort of three versions of the same chart from three different registrars, and I was thinking it might be interesting if we go through and compare them. Because they differ. And so, can everybody get to that wiki page?
I'm there, Michael.
Okay. James, can you get to that?
Just a moment.
Yeah, the link is in the chat area of Adobe Connect. You can just...
I'm there now.
And Sebastian, you can see the wiki page, right?
Yes, no problem.
Okay, so I think we're all good. Adam, can you see?
Yep, I'm on it.
Okay. Well,
If I could jump in here real quickly. Adam, as the other registrar on the call, taking a look at the documents from GoDaddy and Network Solutions, is there anything that jumps out at you as unusual or different? Or?
Not yet. I've been looking at them pretty closely, but on a high level, they seem largely the same. I mean, I know the processes are described a little differently here, but thus far, on a high level, they actually seem quite similar to me.
Okay.
Actually feel a little left out. I didn't realize... I also have a process flow I can happily post as well, just didn't think to do it before the call.
Oh, well, that would be terrific. Can you just... you want, you can either email it to me, or you could go ahead and edit the page and upload the file if you feel interesting from a wiki perspective.
Yeah, I can throw it up on the wiki. I might have to extract it from a PDF, which might take a second, but
maybe
I have something to share as well.
Oh, great. You know, I think if nothing else, we've accomplished something by simply aggregating all of these different drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm sort of the most clueless one of the bunch, I'm glad to hear that that you're feeling like they're pretty similar, just drawn differently, because the difference in the drawings sort of threw me off. And so if you're feeling like the process that they're drawing is really pretty much the same process, maybe we're ahead of the game, further along than I thought we were.
Yeah, I mean, James, is there anything that sticks out to you? In looking at it all, it seems largely similar to me.
Yeah, just as you mentioned, just some differences in terminology, perhaps, and But for the most part, no.
I'd probably be a little distressed to find out if there was a huge difference in the process, but I'm sure we would have, you know, heard about it from our compliance or abuse teams or whatever.
I think that maybe the differences would occur with the registrar differences would occur in the tools and mechanisms to lock or secure or guard against unwanted or unexpected transfers.
Right.
And we can call them all different things, you know, if we want to call them, you know, transfer watchdog type services or something like that.
Right.
But once those are all removed, it seems like the process is pretty standardized.
That's
and uniform.
Point.
Now, I have a question for the registrar type folks. In the case of a thin registry, I sent out a little picture yesterday because I was curious. Do you have to establish direct connections between the two registrars when you're transferring pairwise? So, for example, if there were 100 registrars in the galaxy of registrars, do you have to establish essentially a pairwise connection between you and each of the other ones whenever you transfer between these realms?
That's correct. We establish a connection to their who-is systems.
Mm. So the glue is who-is.
And for thin registries, that is correct. Yeah. Is that your understanding as well, Adam?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And I think one of the issues that we encounter, and this is completely out of scope for the group, but
right.
One of the issues that we see, and I'm going to say this diplomatically, and Adam, chime in, please, at any time, is that sometimes there will be anti-abuse or throttling systems where a registrar is preventing someone from harvesting their WHOIS data, and a high-volume registrar, let's say GoDaddy, dealing with a mom-and-pop registrar, will get caught into that because, you know, when we do a high volume of transfers, it can look like it's harvesting because it's so out of such an outlier from their normal traffic patterns.
Yeah.
Additionally, I think all registrars, with a wink and a nod, will put a link in the WHOIS data text block that's returned to say where it's coming from. And, you know, that they offer competitive registrar services. And then other registrars with a similar wink and a nod will strip that out before returning it to the customers. So, you know, Adam, your thoughts on that? I mean, I'm sure I'm not telling anything here that's a state secret. So.
Yeah, no, exactly. The, you know, on the subject of WHOIS blocking, that's probably one of the number one requests that come through my desk in terms of smaller registrars who seem to be you know, problems that we have connecting to smaller registrars, problems smaller registrars sometimes do have connecting to us. Typically not a problem with the larger guys, I find. but typically a mid to small size sort of issue largely.
Huh, that's interesting. So, you know, one of the issues that it seems interesting from a scope perspective is this. I know that we keep swirling back to who is, but who is carrying more freight than I ever realized.
Mm.
If
on a thin registry level, if you have problems connecting to who is at all, the whole transfers process breaks down.
That's a perfectly stated sentiment there. That is a key link in that process. And, you know, as far as scaling, Mike, I agree with you, and I did reply to you individually about some other ideas. One thing I think that I don't think is even up for discussion is that new GTLDs and TLDs going forward, I don't think that there's going to be any more thin registries. I think that's a legacy, but I could be sorely naive in that point, but...
Well, you know, this call is a very informal, unstructured call, as you can tell, partly because I'm running it. But, you know, there's another idea out there in my head, which is if who is the glue, and who is sort of locked up in a stalemate over issues that are clearly outside of the scope of this working group, have the registrars ever thought about creating a different entity to essentially replace who is in this glue function so that they don't have to rely on this protocol that's very difficult to change, very difficult to make operational improvements to, because of some of the other issues that are surrounding it?
Boy, that's a dynamite question.
Well, and sometimes I'm cagey and I wait until people get out on a limb, but let me tell you where I'm headed with this. Dan Warner's got his gizmo that he does out of Fabulous. I've forgotten what he calls it, but it's that deal where people can throw domain names into the hopper and they appear all over the place.
Domain distribution network?
Say again?
Domain distribution network?
Yeah.
Yep.
Now that's a neutral ground, I think. At least when I talked to Dan about it, he intended it to be that way. And I'm wondering if something like that could be... This would probably have to be an operational agreement between the two rather than a policy thing. But could you expand that to essentially replace who is in this glue function and at the same time get rid of the snarl of scaling problems?
Just off the cuff, and I'm not familiar with the domain distribution network, but just off the cuff, it certainly seems like getting that, from a practical standpoint, getting that degree of cooperation amongst all registrars. I mean, you could probably get the big folks, you know, the Two Cows, Network Solutions, and GoDaddy's, and Register.com to hop on board with a plan like that. But there would be a significant portion of noncompliance, and that
is where we're at today, right?
Well, yeah, and that doesn't even touch into some of the legal issues that Barbara raised today on the list.
Yeah, and I haven't read the list today, unfortunately. I guess where I was headed with that is that, you know, you could think about doing that incrementally. You wouldn't have to necessarily have everybody do it at once. You could start with the big one and then say to the little ones, you're welcome to participate if you want, and here are the benefits, but if you don't want to, that's fine as well. But essentially sidestep some operational logjam around who is, which, given all the policy troubles with WHOIS seems like a really difficult one to modify, and yet it's the operational glue that drives the whole process for the thin registries. For the thick registries, it seems like the now, in the case of a thick registry, is WHOIS the vehicle, or is the registry the vehicle for these information exchanges?
I believe it's the registry, Adam. Is that correct? You just connect to the registry, and all the information you need is there. There's no need to contact the losing or the registrar of record.
Mm-hmm. So what we've really got under the covers, this series of diagrams doesn't really show it, is that under the covers of this process, we've got two separate information processes to exchange information. One relying on WHOIS in the case of a thin registry, and the other relying on the registry when you have a thick one. Is that a summary that we could put in some sort of little mini report?
Well, the thing is about our document is it really doesn't go into the registry role in a whole lot of detail. There's a behind the scenes for some of these steps between. This is really just describing the relationship between the customer and the two different registrars.
Right. And see, what I'm thinking is that what we probably really need to document is the behind the scenes process, and that what we've got is really two of them. And the reason that I'm interested in that is because it may be that when we circle back around to the policy discussion, that we've really got to write sort of two versions of the policy, one for thick registries and one for thin, because in the case of all the agony over email addresses in this question that we're working on right now in the larger group, that question is essentially moot if you've got a thick registry, right?
May I ask, when you say you're checking with the registry for the information in the cases of thick registries, it's still WHOIS data. Is that not correct? So it's still a WHOIS lookup. It's just where the WHOIS lookup is done. Am I right or wrong?
I don't think that's correct. I believe that they're doing an info command through EPP. While it may return data that's very similar to WHOIS, and it will return different data whether you're a registrar of record or just somebody else, I don't believe you're actually using the WHOIS channel. Is that right, Adam? Or
I don't want to say it's right for every registry, just given how different they are, so I'm not 100% sure on every case, but James is largely correct. In most cases, it's an info command via EPP, yeah. Now, that source of data could be, I don't even know, to be quite honest with you. I'd have to go look.
It does, however, materially change the conversation that Barbara and I were having by email through the group earlier today, then. Because I think the way it was worded was that, you know, the WHOIS, the registrar information was contained in the WHOIS, you know, in thick registries. Or most of the thick registries, or at least the ones that she had checked, I think. So it does kind of, if it's not really WHOIS, but rather, you know, some other info command that's used, it really kind of materially changes the conversation that we were having.
I'm going to go have a look when we get off the call. I'm going to talk to some folks back here and see where we're largely pulling them from our major registries, the major thick ones we use anyway.
Yeah, I'll do the same.
I think this is quite tasty.
I think the fact that you're dealing with two real different approaches here is something that we've glossed over before. So, yeah, I think it's definitely helpful.
Yeah. Now, that gets us to the back to these charts, which is, I think, another observation that we've just come to that's pretty important, is that these charts are customer-facing charts, which are fine, but they don't really describe the information flows that happen underneath that.
Yeah, it's funny because the two CAS, we've actually got three. Because when a name moves from reseller to reseller, we largely mimic the transfer process. So, you know, these are largely designed to make it simple for a registrant to understand, as opposed to going, well, if you're transferring your name through a SIC registry and then having to explain that and yada yada.
Yeah.
It should be similar to the registrant. They shouldn't have to learn SIC and things.
Oh, good Lord. No, man.
Heaven.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that it's important that we understand the differences.
Mm-hmm.
Because they bear on the policy issue. If, for example, I mean, I'm sort of raising my eyes heavenward and hoping that most of the SIC registry transfers are actually enabled through EPP rather than through WHOIS. And if that's the case, we might have a lot more flexibility in terms of what we recommend for SIC registry transfers. And at the same time, we probably need to acknowledge the constraints of the WHOIS glue in the thin registry transfers. And then, you know, the two cows, that third example is, in a way, did you get a copy of my little PowerPoint that I sent out last night?
I did. I actually thought it was very useful for training internally here in terms of illustrating how thick and thin work.
Well, I think that another version of that last page has two cows in that middle zone and resellers around the outside.
Well, I would want to... GoDaddy also has a reseller program, and I would just want to emphasize that transactions between resellers or between resellers and the registrar of record are... while they certainly affect registrants, are, from an ICANN perspective, are supposed to be transparent.
Right.
And not covered by any particular policies.
Oh,
I would caution us about going down that road or including those types of transactions in our discussion.
No, I agree. I just sort of mentioned it as a...
You know, it's even more interesting to note.
Oh, yes. Very interesting.
That's about it. But yeah, I agree. It's not really, it's an internal thing largely as opposed to a ICANN thing.
But you know, absolutely. Certainly there's no policy implication. I'm more of an ops guy than a policy guy, and so I always get sort of fascinated when I run into operational stuff like this. But one of the variants of that drawing that gets really twisty is if you have the path from a GoDaddy reseller flowing sort of to the GoDaddy commons and then across to the Two Cows commons and down to a Two Cows reseller. That strikes me as possibly a yet another information flow diagram under the covers again.
Well, but from a just playing devil's advocate here, that shouldn't be, from both policy and from the registrant, shouldn't necessarily be dissimilar from just a transfer from GoDaddy proper to Two Cows proper.
Agreed.
What's going on there at the reseller level is...
for the registrar to manage.
Yeah.
So the information will remain between GoDaddy and Two Cows in that one.
Right. In fact, it never left.
Yeah. It never went actually all the way out to the reseller.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm off that one. I get that. Never mind.
No, I think you're being very thorough and comprehensive in trying to identify all the possible permutations. But some of them are...
Yeah.
At least equivalent, if not identical to one another. So we can reduce through... put some reduction around the problem a little bit.
Now, let's go back to the sort of under-the-covers version of this process flow. Have either of you guys, probably in your technical teams or maybe with EPP documentation, got under-the-covers versions of these kinds of diagrams in your organizations that you could share? I don't want to try and draft that if there's already documentation that describes it.
I don't know offhand, but I can have a look on my end. One thing I would caution is that on the thick, on the thick registry level, when you're talking about EPP, it can vary significantly, is what I guess I would say. Registries love to introduce their own versions of EPP, like, you know, slightly technically different. So, you know, for example, we're doing UK right now, and the UK EPP implementation does not look like your standard SDK for a regular SIC registry sort of thing.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges I'm sure James can sort of attest to. It's just the challenge that you have as a registrar in making everything on the front end look different when on the back end you could hypothetically be dealing with dozens of different systems, policies, and procedures, although they all consider themselves to be very similar. Anyway, so long story short, yes, I can have a look around for that. I'll try to keep it as ubiquitous as possible, but that doesn't necessarily mean it would represent the same process for every EPP thick registry.
Wow.
And I think a generic, and you're absolutely right, it's much more of a, we're presenting the customer with a blanket, and then behind the scenes we're stitching together a quilt.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're talking just gTLDs and eliminating the ccTLDs,
yeah,
the variance is great, or is it more consistent?
I'm talking personally more about ccTLDs. So yeah, on a gTLD level, between registries, there's not really, I don't think, compared to what I see on the CC level, much of a noticeable difference. There are differences, but certainly nothing like the difference between UK and EU, let's say.
Yeah, I think you're right, Adam. It's that the gTLDs are more uniform, not interchangeable by any means, but it's the ccTLDs that really kind of throw the doors open to variety.
Yeah.
You know, dealing with .UK and .CA, Canada is not EPP at all.
Right.
So
totally not related, but this is why new TLDs can scare me sometimes.
Yes. I would mention that while we're doing all of these things behind the scenes, there's really, when we can narrow the issue of issue number one, really focuses on the interaction between registrars with respect to thin registries.
Mm. Yeah.
And for a good generic understanding of what goes on behind the scenes in a gTLD, perhaps the EPP RFCs, which are public, and they read like an RFC, but they are out there, and that's probably about all I could ever release or point you to.
Well, that's pretty good, actually. If there's an RFC, maybe just fire the link to that RFC off to the list as a starting point for the EPP side.
Will do.
How about the behind-the-scenes drawing of the thin registry process, which will prominently feature who is? Is there a good drawing of that process out there somewhere? I mean, this may be something that the tech weenies in your organization would have. You know, as they're doing the requirements definitions for the code that supports that kind of processing, I'm not sure.
Well, you know how engineers like to document things.
Yeah, I do. I've spent a lot of my career as the CIO of really large companies. I'm all about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just rolling the dice. I was thinking, well, maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe somebody out there actually did do a drawing, which would be pretty cool if they did.
If we did, and I'm just speaking hypothetically because I don't know, would have to ask internally, but if we did and it included any tricks of the trade that we've learned or any experience that we've gathered as far as for this registrar you have to use this method, for this registrar you have to go to this guy, you know, it might be something that would not be comfortable putting out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds like it would be more detailed than we need anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it would be, you know, it seems to me it would be maybe one level higher in the level of detail charts. And certainly anything that's tricks of the trade isn't really where we're headed. I'm really mostly interested in getting a head start on a project that we might ourselves otherwise have to do. You know, it was great when Marika came up with these three drawings, because all of a sudden we don't have to draw those. It seems to me that if we can't find sort of two generic drawings, it would probably behoove us to try and draw them, not on this call, but in a subsequent call. Because I think that this issue is going to pop up in a lot of the subsequent questions that are in this PDP. And so I'm really just being lazy and looking for it. I am a good enough engineer to plagiarize wherever possible. No, so if there's something out there that we could steal, that's really what I'm on the hunt for. And so if you guys could just run back into your organizations and see if there's a generic enough version that folks would be comfortable releasing on both sides, on the thick registry and the thin registry side, I think that would be a huge step forward. And then if there isn't, then, you know, we can reconvene and sort of try and noodle our way through it.
Okay.
I'll ask. Yep. That'd be completely cool. And that may be as far as we want to go today on this call. How are other people feeling? I mean, I think we've covered a lot of ground. We've identified that these three drawings are customer-facing. We've identified that there are really fundamentally two different processes, one being the thin registry process that relies very heavily on who is, thick registry process, which we should probably confirm, in general, relies more on EPP. And that we need to see if we can find diagrams that document those behind-the-scenes processes, sort of saying this so that I can go write the notes when I get off the call. Is there anything else that sort of emerged that we need to follow up on?
It's Sebastian. Just looking to the diagrams, it's interesting to see how they discuss with the one who is looking to the diagram. And, for example, if you take the network solution one, I think if I was the customer, I would have some trouble to understand what they want to tell me. Because if you read, you are the customer, you need to check that the domain name administrative contact is okay. And then the number 2, 3, and 4 are between network solution and the administrative contact. And at the end, at the number 6 and number 7, it suddenly come back to be a customer. And we don't have any more the administrative contact here, even if I am sure it's the administrative contact, in fact, who received the email, and that will allow him, if he sent to the customer right, but to the registrant right, but he will allow him to manage again the domain name again. Then in this diagram, there are two different people who are sometimes see as the same one.
So there's no distinction between the customer in these diagrams could refer to the registrant or the administrative contact.
Right.
It assumes they're the same?
No, yeah. It's not assuming that it's the same. It's just assuming that you the customer may deal with that. It's not the problem with network solutions. But, and I am just taking this one. I can take the GoDaddy too, I guess. It's very often the case when you have something designed for your customer when you are not the customer. You can't You can't really be your customer. It's impossible. Then you miss something. It's why I think all those people need a customer to help them to face the real customer.
Excellent point.
Yeah, very, very good point. And does sort of get back to the nub of the discussion about
the underground of that diagram. What it's for the registrar, what it's meant for the registrars, the gaining and the losing one. What does it mean? What is the when you talk about customer, when you talk about administrative contact, how if he thinks that the two are different, the same, and how we deal with that?
I'm just skimming through the one from Eris, the one that looks like a computer flowchart. And in that one, there's no mention of... Oh, there's a mention of admin contact in the first box. Then there's a...
And you see the next box is registrant approved.
Right.
That means that admin contact is equal to registrant in that flowchart.
Yeah.
But what it puzzled me, it's when you are at the... when you go down to the transfer accept by old registrar, if they say no, then the transfer is cancelled. What it's a bit strange, because he must not be cancelled. He must come back to the registrant to confirm that he wants to transfer it.
So this is raising a separate issue, which is that, in a way, and again, I'm not sure this is a policy issue, but it's certainly a customer service issue. These processes are described differently to the extent that they describe different roles and responsibilities in different ways. Even though the underlying steps are similar. One of the driving forces behind the PDP is to make it easier and more consistent and less error-prone for registrants to transfer domains from one registrar to another. And this is an example of something that makes it confusing. Let's say that I was a customer and I was going from Network Solutions to Eris, and I decided to go to both organizations' pages and just compare the transfer process document. I would probably emerge fairly confused. Just because of the difference in the way these are written. Not to mention the confusion between registrant and admin contact that we were discussing on the call on Tuesday.
Now, I'm looking at my chart for Tucas. We even use the term user. So
just throw in another one.
Well, just because, yeah, there's no, certainly I guess there's been no commonality in like the lexicon that's ever been thought of, I suppose.
Yeah.
So we got user, customer, admin, and registrant.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure where we take this point except to highlight the fact that there is this sort of inconsistent lexicon. That's a good way to describe it. It's certainly far away from the email address question that we're working on right now, but in the broader sense of the GDP, it's certainly confusing, no?
Well, these diagrams are confusing, but I think the language of the transfer is more specific. The transfer policy is more specific.
That's not what the customer receives.
Agreed.
You see, in the discussion about the email address, if you look to the last one diagram, that's the GoDaddy one, it seems to me that it's quite consistent, even if they don't explain really what is the customer, but let's imagine that the customer knows that they had been contact and so on. But when you look to the number two, the customer must unlock the domain and retrieve an authorization code from the current registrar. Why we don't add a sentence or an action saying that he must also confirm or give a new email address to proceed with this transfer.
Can you say that a different way, Sebastian? I didn't quite follow that.
What I wanted to point out is that in this, you are requesting requesting something from the customer, and we at the same time we are not sure about the right email address to be used, or we are not sure to have one. At the same time, they need to ask the authorization code to unlock and transfer the domain name. At that time, in this exchange, it could be added to have to finalize the right email address needed for this transfer.
Yeah, and if you look in number four, the destination, there it says the customer confirms the transfer with the ID and key from the email. But we don't know which email address we're talking about. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. It's...
And the reason we don't know which email address it is because in number two, it's not specified which email address to use.
It would actually be number three. It just says customer, but it is probably, if you look at the transfer policy, the admin contact email address that number three is referring to.
Yes, it's almost always the admin contact email.
Yeah.
So I think maybe we're criticizing these things for simplifying the language for the benefit of a customer, because
right.
A customer probably understands customer better than they understand admin contact and registrar or domain name holder and all the names, all the things that we know and understand. I think that most often these are just simplifications to help a customer understand that they're the customer, and the customer stands for, in this case, admin contact and or registrar and or domain name holder, etc. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Well, I think it might be a bad thing, because I think in that simplification, what we may have evidence of is a way that a naive customer, not knowing the difference between the powers of their registrant address and the powers of their admin contact address, leave themselves open to being hijacked simply because they don't understand that. And that it might be useful to, again, I don't know where the policy angle is of this, but it might be useful to spend some energy clarifying that You know, for example, let's say that we had three keys to the house. Or, you know, in a car. Car is a better example. My car has two keys. One is the key that I can give to the parking lot attendant, and it will only drive the car, but it won't get into the glove compartment, and it won't get into the trunk. Whereas the other key will get into everything. That's really sort of the difference between the admin contact and the registrant email, is that one of those keys has much more power than the other, and I would bet that most customers aren't aware of that.
I think you may be right, Mike. I'm just not sure it's a part of the transfer process. I think if you were giving someone just simple instructions on how to start their car, you might not need to deal with the, you know, the security information you just dealt with. I think that there might be room for separate communication to a customer about security and about understanding the difference between the registrant and the admin contact. In fact, I've learned this week. I didn't realize how much difference there was, and I've been involved in this for all these years.
Yeah.
I probably have, if I go back and look, I think probably I used the same email address for my domain holder, for the account holder in most cases, and for the admin contact. So,
oh, I know.
I'm learning too, but I still think that if you're trying to keep illustrations and communication simple so people can understand them and not have questions, you sometimes want to reduce the things that you're teaching people in one particular place. Security is another issue that, you know, while it's related from a policy standpoint, might not be the best place to communicate security to if someone's trying to learn how to transfer, possibly.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with these illustrations that summarize everything as just customer. To me, that's a reasonable translation.
I think that
for a document that's oriented towards customers, not a document that's oriented towards policy.
Right, but the policy issue. Well, it depends on which policy issue we're after.
Mike, this is James.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to have to step out now.
Yeah,
exactly. Hopefully this was worthwhile.
James, before you leave, can I ask you one brief question?
Sure.
I noticed, I was reviewing, actually, the communications that started, that actually prompted my comment to you and to Mike this morning, that then Barbara followed up on. And I think it was actually something you wrote, and I quote it. So a quick check of GTLD WHOIS data shows that registrant email is also displayed false at registry. So Mike's point about elephant in the room is accurate. And that sent me off on a tangent about whether, you know, the display of WHOIS data is really the issue, not the thick or thin. But at that time, I didn't realize that, well, maybe with thick registries, you're not actually using the WHOIS, you're using EPP. So my comments may not be as relevant as I thought. And if you wanted to correct that for the whole group, I would appreciate it.
Let me confirm that is indeed the case. I mean, I think you may be right. For some of the thick registries, we may use WHOIS. I don't believe
okay.
you, but let
well,
me,
well,
let me
reason,
confirm
that's
that.
A reasonable, that's reasonable. But if you find that there is some value to correcting that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I will look into that.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, gang. This was, I think, a great call.
Thank you.
I'll take a crack at summarizing it, and we'll reconvene next week on the regular call. Thanks a
great.
Lot.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.